We've been talking about different social topics that aren't easy to talk about, sort of hot topics. We talked about racism, we talked about politics, and today we're talking about sexism against women. So buckle up and grab your note sheet. Why is it that it's such an uphill battle for women in our culture? Why is there still this great disparity between wages, between men and women? Why is there a void of leadership in corporations, in the medical field, in education, sports, professional, athletic, college level? Like a void of leadership. We still live in a masculine culture designed by men and with masculine values. And today we're going to try to take a look at like what can be done about that and what's our role in that. Years ago, I read a book by Paul Tournay. It's in your note sheet on the back. I've got some recommendations there. He wrote a book called Gift of Feeling. And in that book, he pointed out that women being discriminated against wasn't just a problem for women, it was an everyone problem. Because when you have masculine values like power and success and, you know, supposed rational thinking, you're missing a balance in culture. It's sort of like this. Let's say that you and a couple families decide you're going to take a snow ski vacation, and so you know, you pick the like perfect resort, and you get everybody ready, and you know your job is you got to get all the ski equipment. So you get the skis and the boots and the poles, and you know you got the goggles and the hats and the gloves and everything. And everybody gets together, and you get there, and it's like the perfect resort. You're like, wow, this is just awesome, you know. So first day to ski, I mean, everybody gets their stuff together. They come down into the lobby, they jump in the van, they go up in the mountain. Everybody's like so ready for this thing, you know. And you get right at the base of the mountain, and you look up, and you realize, no snow. And then someone comes with the bright idea, well, maybe we could still ski. So everybody gets in the chairlift and they go to the top of the mountain and they get on all their gear and they put on their skis and they start trying to slide down in the mud and the rocks, and you're watching, you're thinking, well, they're kind of skiing, but like not like really skiing. And it's like, that's our culture. Imbalanced, overbalanced with masculine tendencies. Trying to ski, look like we're skiing, but no snow. Today we're going to talk about how do we bring the snow. So turn to the person next to you and just say that to him. Just say, today we're going to talk about how do we bring the snow. Like talk to him, tell him. Today we're going to talk about how to bring the snow. Jesus used this analogy when he was describing Christ followers and the difference that they can make. It's in your notes. I'm going to read it to you. You are the light of the world, a city on a hill, glowing in the night for all to see. Don't hide your light. Let your shine for all. Let your good deeds glow for all to see, so they will see and praise your heavenly Father. So the idea is, how do we bring the snow? How do we make sure that this culture that we live in could change? And in this particular area, sexism against women is the big idea this weekend. Write in your notes. We can restore God's partnership plan between men and women. So how do we bring the snow? It's not a woman problem. It's an everyone problem. Right from the very beginning, when they wrote about what it would look like when God made this whole thing, this is what they said. So God created humans in his own image. He created them to be like himself. He created them male and female. He blessed them and said to them, have many children. Go Utah. Fill the earth and take control of it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the air. Rule over every living thing that moves on the earth. God saw all that he had made, and it was good. And he said it to them. From the very beginning, it was supposed to be a partnership. Right from the start, it was supposed to be men and women combined in a partnership to do life and create this entire thing. And we are a long ways away from that. Carlos Sanchez is one of our pastors in our network of East Lake churches. And she did a sermon recently, and she landed on this topic, and she was discussing this whole issue. And she had a piece of it. It's about 6 minutes, and I wanted you to hear it. She gives some backdrop, certainly from her perspective. And so this is Carla Sanchez, one of our pastors. Relax and check this out.
Now, it's one thing for us to talk about sexism and inequality between the genders way over there. And this is where I'm going to bring the conversation home. And here is where I say, I come in peace. It is my hope that if you knew me, you would look at my life and you would quickly know I do not dislike men. I am very happily married to a man. I'm glad he's a man. Some would say I have a thing for him, okay? I'm a mom of two boys. I want them to understand and to be proud of their manhood. It is a beautiful thing. My dad is also a man. I love him. I have several close homies, close friends who are men. This is not me looking for a fight. This is not me trying to say men are bad. What I want us to do right now is to look at how power has been distributed throughout history in our very country and to see that this has not been equal, that there's been inequality even here at home in our wonderful country. So listen to this list so we can hear where we've been and how far we still have to go. In 1777, a year after our nation was established, we passed a law saying women couldn't vote. Women could also not own property at this time. In 1866, 90 years later, the 14th Amendment passed, allowing all citizens the right to vote. Citizens were defined as males. In fact, when Susan B. Anthony goes to vote in the next election, her vote not only doesn't count, she's actually arrested. It wouldn't be till 1920 that all women in our country were given the right to vote. That is 99 years ago. Fast forward to 1975. Can you raise your hand if you're alive in 1975? Like, no shame. Don't be all, like, shy about it. Okay. This is not the ancient past, okay? This is recent history. Look at your neighbor. They're not old. Right? They're not. I heard one of you whisper, some of them are. Well, I'll let you pick that fight. So 1975, the Supreme Court ruled to deny states the right to exclude women from juries. This happened yesterday. How did this just pass? Even today, if you look at our statistics, while women make up roughly 50% of the population, we women represent much less than 50% of our elected official positions. And if you push back and say, well, there's no capable women, I would say, then what's wrong with your structure? Again, I just want us to acknowledge that power has not been equally distributed between the genders. And here on the ground, those realities are still here. As I prepared for this message, I reached out to several women in our community and I said, how in your life here in Chula Vista have you experienced sexism on the ground? I'm going to give you a short list. I got a long list, but I'm going to give you a short list of some of the examples I heard and even a couple of my own experiences. I got multiple replies from women who are in male-dominated work environments who said, whether intentional or unintentional, whether malice or not, how often the men from my company, from my organization, they go out and hang out and never extend the invite. Culturally, I think we would call this a boys' club. I recently heard the term brotopia, and I like it. Themes and stories included women coming to terms with realizing that all the top seats in their organizations were filled by men. Stories included women saying, I came to find out that I was being paid less than my male counterparts, and when I discussed it with my boss, no change came. I heard of women saying that the unexpected the uncommunicated expectation in their own homes, that they will do the bulk of the childcare, the parenting, and the housework, even if they work outside the home. I heard stories about women being objectified. I once was offered a job from a big, respected church doing really good things in Southern California, with the understanding that if I took the job, I would be called a director when all of my male counterparts would be called pastors. I spoke to a woman from our church who was at a former church, and she was leading in her couple small group when the pastor found out, and he spoke to her and he said that she was not allowed to lead and teach, that was her husband's job. And then she was faced with that awkward, difficult place that I know so many women know that says, what do I do now? Do I just shut up and take it and believe the best? Or do I find a way to push back? How do I show up in the space? Because what we know is that what we tolerate today becomes culture tomorrow. But on the flip side, if I come into aggressive, I'm going to be seen as intense. I'm going to be seen as aggressive. If I come into too fragile, too delicate, I'm going to be seen as weak. If my eyes get watery because I tap into the "this hurt my feelings" thing and my voice trembles, I'm going to be seen as emotional. The whole thing ends up feeling trapped, as if there's truly no way to win, that there's no way to be heard. And the issue always comes back to somehow we screwed up. And it's the, we don't even know what's happening, because here's one of the problems with sexism. Most often than not, it's subtle, it's covert. It's not some big jerk walking into the room and saying, "Hey, I'm a sexist, I'm gonna make it feel small." It's not like that. Oftentimes, these are really good men who are simply informed in a sexist culture. Their intentions are not bad, they're even unconscious. It's such a mind trip when it happens to you, because you can't even boldly call it out. It's just deeply entrenched. And again, none of this is me trying to say, let's demonize men. I'm not even saying all men do this. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm just saying the subtle nature of it adds this very weird complexity. And even the innocence of it, in the sense that I understand, we get that this is something embedded deeply in our culture. Report after report shows us that women have an uphill battle that men just don't have. This is nationally and this is globally today in 2019. And here's my ask. Last week we talked about us being open and aware to considering in which ways is there sin in my heart on this topic. I would like to take that one step forward and say this. May you be open to seeing in which way sin, in this case sexism, but we can say the same thing about racism and other versions of inequality, in which ways has sin impacted and directed our ideologies, our structures, our systems, our cultures, in such a way that it's now covert and that it's now prescribed as normal or okay? The term I'm talking about is systemic sin. May we be open as believers, as people, to say, I think there's a better way. I think there's a way for us to do this that promotes equality between all people. In this case specifically, we're talking about sexism.
Yeah, I really like the way she frames it with this idea of sin, because sin is anything that's off God's mark. And the mark was partnership. So it's an okay word to use about it. I like to see sometimes things like light and dark. And so when Jesus said you're light, what he's saying is you're bringing things back to mark. You're saying, well, this is how God intended it, and I'm light, I'm following Jesus, and part of what I'm able to do is bring it back to the way it was supposed to be, which is partnership. Bring the snow. And so I want to look at just three different people groups today to make it super, super practical. Write in your note, parents. Train your children in the right way, partnership. Write that above that. And even when they're old, they will not turn from it. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked, for you will reap whatever you sow. So here's what he's saying. Whatever shows in our parenting shows up in our public life. So we get the idea that we can change things on a public level and somehow it's going to seep back into family and parenting. But the way you change what's public is how you parent. And so let me talk to all the dads for a minute, just for a second. And if you're a dad of a son and you're training them, your son learns how to respect women by watching you. And your son learns how to talk to women by watching you. And not all of us had the best role models in that area. Your son learns that women are partners and have tremendous insights to add to them, and they're not just sex objects to be used by you. So I'm just asking all the dads for a moment, like in this idea of, you know, how do we bring it back to Mark? What type of man are you creating? What type of seeds are you sowing? Because that'll be the next public that we live in. Now, all the men that have daughters, for a second, I want to say this to you. it's important to get into their world. It may be playing dolls, it may be playing football. Depends on what kind of daughter you have. But it's soon, like, you don't want to be that guy that says, oh, I don't understand all that girl stuff. I just leave it up to her mom. I don't understand women. Newsflash, nobody understands women. Okay? But if you take that approach, that's a sellout. And you're leaving your daughter unarmed for what she's going to face in this culture, and it's going to be uphill. We brought a young woman into our family in high school. She stayed with us through college, and it was my job, I sometimes refer to her as a foster daughter, to be the father figure in her world. And it was a crazy world, and I tried to jump in the middle of it, and there's lots of things I didn't understand. But when the important decisions came, when she faced the really important choices in her life, I was there. And we did them together. The most important thing you do with your daughters is, like, be in their world all the time, from when they're little all the way when they grow up. And the fact that you don't understand, listen, that's actually an asset. What I learned is I could go to our foster daughter from time to time and say, listen, honey, I don't understand. Could you teach me? See, it's the shifting of the power, which is exactly what we need. Don't show up as Mr. Fix-It and a know-it-all. I mean, I know as a dad, there's times where you swoop in on the white horse and rescue everything. Like, we always need that. That's cool. But not always. From time to time, with your daughters, listen, men. From time to time, with your daughters, the best thing you can do for them is to sit down and look them in the eye and say, honey, I do not understand what's going on. But I think you do. Would you show me? Now, the moms, let me talk to you for a second. All the moms in the room who have kids, the first thing I want to say is don't let your issues with men ruin how you parent your kids. Because I can bring my baggage into my parenting. And then I pass that baggage to my children. I understand the problem. Do you know one of the best things about getting healed of your issues is you don't pass them on to your kids? That's one of the greatest things. Like, when you really get healed and you get a handle on stuff and you realize, wow, I'm not passing on what was passed into me to my children. And that's what it means to have the power of God and light in your life. If you have a boy, you have the very best position. All moms now, if you are parenting a son, you have the very best position to teach him that a woman can be something more than a sex object, that a woman can be a leader, that a woman can have tremendous influence. You have the best position to show him that a woman can bring tremendous value and perspective and not have all the sexual stuff get mixed in. And by the way, if you're a woman here, the best thing you can teach your son to do is to be a servant. Because men are called to lay their life down and be sacrificial, so you might as well get them started early. If it bothers you to have them open the door for you, get over it. Because they need to learn how to serve. If it's drying the dishes, whatever it is. Because men, a big part of the way this whole thing got, like, messed up was I go out and earn the money and come home and sit on my butt. And you do all the serving and the cooking and everything around the house, and you've got the nurturing heart, not me. Wrong-o. Men were called to be the servants and the sacrificial ones. Now, if you have a daughter, part of what happens with moms and daughters is a lot of times moms start the process by wanting to control their daughters so their daughters don't make all the mistakes that they made. And that is so normal, man. It's like, I've got a daughter here, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure she doesn't make the same mistake with men, and she's not going to make all the mistakes that I made. So you can get super, super controlling with your daughter. And then the problem is they end up doing exactly what you tried to control them not to do. Have you noticed it? Here's why. There's a principle. Anytime I try to control somebody from doing something, they normally end up doing it because it causes them to feel free from my control. It's almost like I'm setting them up to lose. The way they feel free is to do exactly what I try to control them not to do, because at least they get to feel free. There's a better way. Train them. Gosh, you have the best position with your daughters to talk to them about this stuff. You're in it every day, just like Carla said. For men, the problem with men is, like, this is where the snow analogy breaks down a little bit. The problem for men is, like, we designed the aquarium. We designed it and built the aquarium that we all swim in. It's perfect for us. We don't even notice it. But you do. And you can train your daughters. One thing I want to drop in your heart today, I think this is maybe the number one thing, at least in the stuff that I seem to read about, is body image. Man, women have a tough one in this area. Like body image, like just feeling okay about you and your body. And you got a great position to help your daughter with this as she gets older, because it's going to be an uphill battle, because all the movies, all the social media, all the superstars, everybody, it puts out this unrealistic body that usually has a million filters over it, it's been airbrushed or whatever, and they're trying to like be that, and they're too young to know that's not real. Meghan Trainor did something not too long ago, it was a little while ago, but I grabbed it because I thought it was really interesting. She got upset because they airbrushed her in one of her music videos.
Hey guys, I took down the Me Too video because they photoshopped the crap out of me, and I'm so sick of it and I'm over it, so I took it down until they fix it. My waist is not that teeny. I had a bomb waist that night. I don't know why they didn't like my waist, but I didn't approve that video and it went out for the world, so I'm embarrassed. I told them to fix it ASAP Rocky because I will be going to Times Square to play for my fans, so I hope they fix it for me, and I am sorry about this.
Yeah, I saw that video, and they did airbrush it. Now, here's what I thought about, though, when I saw the video. I thought, God, that'd be the greatest teaching tool for moms. To, like, sit down with your daughters and play that and go, look what's happening. Like, do you see the culture that you live in? Do you see the uphill battle that you're going to face? Who is going to talk to your daughter? Men can't identify with that, but you can. So dads, moms, parents. Number two, write in your notes, men. Don't lie to each other, since you've taken off your old self with its practices and put on your new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. I want you to write three words, everybody in the room, but especially the men. Show respect, spread encouragement, empower women. So what the writer is saying, and this ends up in the Bible, and this is a man, by the way, that wrote this. He's saying, I've seen this in my life. There's like an old me and a new me. And I have to choose which it's going to be and how I show up. Is it going to be old me, new me? And the new me can create partnership in our culture. The old me probably won't. And so here's what I'm asking all the men. This is, like Carla said, this is my ask. Pay attention. The aquarium is perfect for you. And you're not going to notice it unless you pay attention. Unless you choose into new self. How is it, that you're going to spot when someone is being disrespected? I know guys are like, oh, it's okay to go to strip clubs, and my son goes, and they don't even get it as disrespect. They just be thinking because they're not jumping somebody's bones, it's a lot better than what I used to do, and I understand that. I like get the process, but listen to me. Do you know how disrespectful it is to pay somebody to look at their naked body? To contribute to that's how someone makes a living? I don't care if they like or they enjoy it or they want to do it. That's disrespectful. But in our culture, it doesn't feel that way, and I understand that. Old self. It's like, hey, it's a lot better than what I used to do. New self. Whoa. That is so disrespectful to do that to a woman, to further that in her life. Disrespectful. So you have to be willing to pay attention. New self. looking for opportunities. Who in your life could you encourage? Who in your life could you plow the road a little bit for them? And it's a woman, to help them go further than they could be without you. So I'm asking all the guys, pay attention. And then third, women. Last one for today. For we are God's masterpiece. He has created us anew in Christ Jesus so we can do good things He planned for us long ago. Long ago, right from the start, God made you equal and planned for you to be equal. That was His design right from the very beginning. And in our culture, that's a tremendous uphill battle. It's been designed by men to make it easier for men. But that doesn't change what's true. I want you to write three things. The first one is find your voice. And when I say find your voice, I'm not just saying talk more. I mean, that's important too. But what I'm saying is, your voice is you. One of the things that Paul Tournay says in his book is the problem is that for women to move through different corporations and organizations and be promoted, they usually have to adopt masculine values to get there. So we end up with women that don't bring themselves, and nothing changes. So what the idea is, my ask, and let me say before we go any further, I obviously can't bring any of this talk today from the perspective of a woman. So actually, I'm speaking from someone on the other side of the partnership. And I want you to hear it as a request. An invitation from someone saying, we need the snow. Like, I understand. I don't understand you, and I don't understand the problem, but I know we need the snow. So when you hear me say, find your voice, I'm asking, as this side of the partnership, we need you and how you think and how you process and your perspective. You'll probably have to work at that. Women are great at style. They know how they like their hair and their clothes and their nails. And, you know, men are cavemen. They just put a t-shirt on. But women are good at style. And you may have to develop a communication style. You may have to go to YouTube and get some lessons on it and figure out, how am I going to deliver myself? The problem is, for a lot of women, they're so angry on the inside. When they start talking, they deliver their anger and their resentment and their bitterness, and it never gets to who they are. And what's needed is you, a woman, how you see things, delivering yourself. Are you going to tell stories, use analogies? Are you going to speak from your history? But I'm asking, figure it out so you can deliver you, because you're the snow. Now the next one, right? Say what you think and feel. I know this is a challenge because there's this huge back push in our culture. You're over-emotional and you're just being emotional. And, you know, there's this... And I did want to say think and feel because I don't want to categorize all women that you're always coming from your feelings and emotions. I don't know. But I did want to say this, is that this idea that, you know, men are always bringing the facts and that's more reliable than emotion, that is wrong. Emotion is every bit as valid as a starting place for communication as facts. Here's why. Facts change. I know how men are. They're like, well, you know, as a matter of fact, or speaking from the facts, or the facts say, and then they position that as like it's so much more solid than someone that speaks from their heart and emotion. Here's what I've discovered about the whole thing, is that facts are changing all the time. Someone says, well, the facts say, and then a month later, the facts have changed. In the story, think of how many things you believed were true just a year ago that now you understand, oh, the facts have changed and it's not true. emotion and facts are equally valid as starting places. They're equally as reliable, they're equally as consistent. The masculine culture has taught us emotions are to be regulated to the like sort of stepchild, like way off to, like you can't count on those, you can't depend on those. They are just as reliable as facts. In fact, here's the truth about communication. It's a combination of facts, opinion, and emotion. Anybody that tells you, hey, I'm just saying the facts, it's just the facts, it's not true. There's always opinion and emotion. There's always opinion and emotion blended in. So I'm asking all the women if you'd be willing to say what you think and feel. And then the last thing is build bridges. And this is the difficult one for sure. Because I know that you could be a woman here and say, yeah, right. You know, you're asking me to build a bridge towards the oppressors. You're asking me to build a bridge towards all the ones that held me back. They should be building a bridge to me, and then I should be deciding if they get to walk across it. And I also know that there's women here that have been through very painful experiences through their childhood and their life with men, been abused by men. So this is where I want to be the most understanding and gentle when I say build a bridge towards men. Be willing to step out of whatever being in our culture has caused for you and build a bridge towards men. And I have a reason. Because as you build a bridge towards men, you'll recognize your need for your partnership with God. You'll draw closer to God. The bitterness and the resentment and the hurt and the anger and the story we keep telling ourselves because we've been discriminated against is comforting and it feels good, but please be honest enough to recognize it never draws us closer to Jesus. It just turns us on ourselves. But when you're building a bridge towards men, you're going to need him. And the result of it will be, I feel closer to God as I'm building. I recommended this on your note sheet. The Wounded Heart is a book I read a long time ago as well. Had a huge impact on me. David Allender, done tons of work with women in various different groups. A Wounded Heart specifically about healing of sexual abuse. But in the book he has one sentence and I wanted to read it to you. I've come to realize that the only valid and lasting reason to change is to know God and to embrace his purpose for my life. And I thought, 40 years of work? And he boils it down to that. You know what the payoff is? I'm closer to Jesus. And that's a huge payoff. So for all the women in the room, only you can build a bridge towards the bin. Only you can forgive them. Only you can give them another opportunity. Only you can help them see it is so much better to ski with snow. And it has always been God's intention from the very, very beginning. Last thing, I hope this helps. At Eastlake Church, if you're a woman, let this be the place you know that you're completely equal, that your voice matters every bit as much, that there's no leadership position in our entire network that you cannot hold, that your opinion is equally valued, that your contribution is treasured. In this place, in this church, we're all partners. And you're an equal partner.